Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bullandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is Issue 2025. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. Welcome to Issues 2025, sir.
Thanks so much, Steve. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Let's look back for a minute on 2024, if you don't mind. What do you consider the biggest success stories at City Hall during the past year just completed?
Well, you know me well enough that I want to reframe the question. What's the biggest success for the city of Wichita? And I think that's the announcement of the Biomed Center and the start of construction. That is such a significant event for this community. It's going to help diversify our economy in a way that I don't know that we ever could have fully imagined. When you have 3,000 students downtown, you have all the businesses that are going to grow up around that are revolving around the medical industry. I think that is a true game changer for us. It builds on a very strong base that we have in aviation, but in a way that is, of course, very different.
It's a good point. Over the past 45 years or so, we've had a constant, almost constant talk or dialogue every year about how can we diversify and do something besides airplanes. Well, you really can't, but you can also, this is a way of trying something else. It should be very successful.
Yeah, and it comes from some visionary leaders. We can't say enough about Rick Muma at WSU for pulling the team together and for working so diligently with those at KU, working with the private sector, folks that can make it happen. And of course, the private sector is going to drive all of the development that occurs around the Biomed Center. So it's the market's working the way it should, and I'm real excited about what this community is going to look like in the next 10 years.
Let's talk a little bit about public safety. How are staffing levels for police and firefighters now?
Well, we're doing much, much better in terms of filling vacant positions. And we're getting to the point where it's possible that by the end of 25, we could be fully staffed in the police department. We have been fully staffed in the fire department. It's just a matter of filling vacancies as they come up and having academy classes. So I'm feeling really good about our ability to put people on the street.
And when you get to 3.5% unemployment, there's a lot of people. There's not many people out there even looking for work. But
the police department under Chief Sullivan has been really innovative in their recruitment efforts. One of the things that they're doing now, which I think is really interesting, is they are trying to recruit college athletes, and they're doing a recruitment effort just like an NFL team would try to recruit or a college team would try to recruit athletes and, entice them into the, not only make them interested in Wichita, but make them interested in the job itself. And they're just, doing a lot of great things to make sure that we have qualified classes and a significant number of people in the pipeline.
You have to run 40-yard dashes then?
They may. I don't know about that.
Well, listen, are the first responders getting all the training and technical support they need once they get on the job?
Yes. Once you're recruited and you get through our extensive training, you also have, on the police side, you have annual retrainings and updates. And then on the fire side, I think we're continuing to enhance what we do at our fire training facility. Mm-hmm. We've got work to do to make sure that we get everybody through sufficient training, that we're training in a like manner. So when you have different fire stations respond to a fire call, they're all addressing the fire in the same way. But that's an emphasis of Chief Snow, and she'll continue to push to make sure that we've got advanced training for our firefighters.
When you look at pay levels for those folks, what cities do we have to compete with as far as the pay level is concerned?
Well, we use two sets of comparisons. First are larger cities in the state of Kansas, and our goal is to try to get pay at the top or close to the top of for Kansas cities, because, again, we are the largest city in the state. And then we compare ourselves with large cities in the I-35 corridor. So we start with Des Moines on the north. We compare ourselves with Kansas City, Missouri. We also look at Tulsa and Oklahoma City and Fort Worth. Those are the cities we primarily use in our comparison group.
The new homeless shelter is open. How much will it cost annually to keep it open?
Well, we estimate that the subsidy for the facility is about $2.5 million a year, and the city council has allocated $5 million basically take care of that subsidy for the first 2 years of operation. And then from that point on, there'll be a nonprofit board that will run the shelter and be responsible for fundraising. I'm sure we'll have a role in helping support the facility, but it will not be as significant as what we're doing or what we will do here in these first 2 years.
We talk about unhoused people. Do other cities our size have similar numbers of unhoused people? I know they're going to do that point-in-time survey here later, but what about the numbers? How do we compare with other cities?
We're probably comparable in the Midwest and maybe even down into Texas, for instance, for cities our size. But then you have places like California, which have such a high concentration of homeless residents, and our numbers pale in comparison to theirs. And so it really depends on who you're looking at. I think you'll find the same on some in some East Coast cities.
They had a cold snap, and the police went out and talked to as many homeless people as they could, and we didn't get much. Some of them, not very good response of coming to the shelter.
Well, dealing with homelessness is not an easy issue, and I don't profess to be an expert. We have so many great providers in the community that deal with this day in and day out. I think what our police department found is that it's not going to be, simply open a new facility and everybody will flock to it. There are people are homeless for a number of reasons. And some people like the independence and don't necessarily want to adhere to a strict set of rules for where they're living. But at the same time, those rules are necessary to keep the facility operating effectively. We found that some people don't want to give up their animals. And even though we've provided free boarding for those animals during the winter at our animal shelter, when we actually roll out the MAC itself, because right now all we're doing is providing an emergency shelter out of that building. But starting in April, we'll expand services, and that'll be over another year that we'll be able to get to a fully operational multi-agency center. And when we do that, we'll have kennels and kennel technicians so that we can actually take care of people's animals. That removes a barrier. We hopefully will have more caseworkers that can better identify the underlying causes of homelessness and then help individuals address those issues. We often talk about substance abuse and mental health, but sometimes it's also just it's a matter of just finding a good job and finding an affordable place to live. And that's the other part of this, which may be the hardest nut to crack, and that is coming up with affordable housing. That if you're in the shelter for a short term, where do you go next? And I know that's something the mayor and council continually talk about. We want to somehow help the market generate more affordable housing. We're going to play a role in building some units adjacent to the MAC that will help as maybe transitional housing. But that'll only be 75 units probably, and the need is much greater than that.
And we've had a problem with camping. People just kind of camping out in different places. And have you got that taken care of, do you think?
Well, no. I mean, the camping is pretty extensive right now, as it is in probably all parts of the country.
Yeah.
The ordinance gives us a little more power to remove the encampments. But at the same time, we've been working pretty hard to make sure that it's a compassionate enforcement action. And so our Parks and Recreation Department will be responsible for cleaning up the encampments, but we're going to have a team of folks that will work with those that are in the encampments to try to get them the services they need. And all of our employees that are going to touch the encampments are going through training so that we can deal with a number of issues, including, you know, the trauma that's associated for many people when they are uprooted from what they know is their home right
yeah.
now. So it's a, like I said, it's a complex issue, and you want to treat people as people and recognize the humanity that's involved in all of this.
Switching subjects for just a second here, how effective are the city's advisory boards in helping to find answers to problems, or do they just tell us what the problems are?
That's a really interesting question because we're doing something that the city of Lawrence completed, I think, about a year ago, and we're doing a kind of a sunset review of all our boards and commissions, relooking at their missions, at the work that they tackle on a regular basis, how they provide feedback and recommendations to the mayor and council. And some of these are probably been around for 20, 30 years. So it's a good question. Is there still a need for that group? Or does the group, if you keep the group, does it need to change the scope of the work that it does? And I think overall our boards and commissions are effective, but it never hurts, especially in government, to kind of challenge what you're doing and determine if there's a better approach.
You're listening to Issues 2025 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. The city, as I understand it, faces budget shortfalls for the next couple of years. Can you tell us about that?
No, Steve, I don't want to talk about that.
All right, let's go on.
I know.
It's a problem. And
it is. And we have what's called a structural deficit. So it's not a one-time change in revenues or in expenses. We were really behind on the wage rates for our employees. That really started back in the recession, 10, 15 years ago, and we never really caught up. And so the last few years, we've been trying to adjust our employee wages, both for our union and non-union employees, so that we're competitive. And that was the problem. Not only were we not treating our people fairly in wages, but we were losing employees because of that. And it was really hard in recruitment. So I think we're competitive now. That comes at a price. We also are seeing some reductions in our revenues. And as a result of that, we're as we go into planning for 2026, we're anticipating about a $3.5 million deficit in that year, but it grows. And when we get to 2027, we believe that we'd be facing somewhere like a $9 million deficit, and then $10 million the year after that, if we don't take some actions to adjust now and to address some of the structural issues that are facing us.
That's why I had heard it was much more than that. So. Maybe you should.
Well, because what you're hearing, what's been talked about, is the cumulative deficit over a three-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take those numbers and add them up, then that's where you're hearing numbers that are in excess of $20 million. But that's not in any one year.
What impact did the federal pandemic money, recovery funding, what impact did it have on local government? Did that something they paid the bills with, or how was that spent?
Yeah, we tried really hard not to pay our daily operating bills out of that money, because we knew that would just falsely prop us up and would make it even more difficult when that money dried up. So we put it primarily into capital projects or one-time expenses, and then back into the community. We funded a number of community initiatives that helped nonprofits get back on their feet in some cases, and in other cases, help them deal with specific problems that came out of the pandemic for the people that they serve. And then we used it to enhance our libraries and also to build a police substation, things that we would have had to use property taxes for. So it gave us a little bit of relief in that regard.
So here's a tough question. What will it take to get the city's spending back in line with its revenue?
You know, that's what I worry about every day. This council and the previous council that I served were really committed to early work on the budget. So we're already starting here in January. Budget doesn't get adopted till August. But we're going to have a workshop with the council later this month where we'll talk about the process that we're going to use. And we could go through a number of tactical actions that would reduce the budget, but there wouldn't be any context for those. It was just, and we don't want to cut just to cut, because that's not strategic and is not in alignment with what our residents want. So we're going to talk to the council about a strategic budget framework that is that will actually reflect the information we get from our citizen survey, where people tell us really what they want, and where we're doing well and where we're falling down. And we'll zero in on some of those services for improvement. And then we'll also use information from council's goal setting and kind of merge all of that to come up with this strategic framework. I'm excited about the work, and I hope the council embraces it. If they agree to the strategies, then we'll be able to use that to analyze our budget proposals. And I think we can bring in a budget that will be balanced, but will also really hit the areas that the residents want us to hit.
You know, what you could do is just be really simple, just raise taxes.
That will not happen. I'll guarantee you that. The council has made that clear that we'll not be doing that.
Are there other streams of revenue besides property tax that we can look at? I mean,
yeah, we're limited in what we can do in the state of Kansas on our own. We could put in a sales tax, but it takes voter referendum.
Yeah.
And we know that the voters right now are not overly supportive of a lot of initiatives that could come forward with, to be financed out of sales tax. In a perfect world, you don't want to use sales tax for operations, or you want it for limited operations, but you don't want to build a whole budget around a sales tax. It's very susceptible to downward movement during a recession. It's a much better revenue source for capital projects, especially those that you can adjust as revenue drops.
The downtown development of this city, how's it shaping up? Where are we at on that?
Well, a lot of plans are coming in. Some are just concepts. Some are actually more developed plans for the redevelopment of existing buildings downtown that are underutilized or even not utilized. So they've been vacant for many of them, a number of years. And then we have some spots that I think either existing buildings will be demolished, or we have some infill sites and plans. Developers have already come in with plans for those. A lot of the projects are for housing, which you would expect with the number of students that will be coming down here. But also now some are mixed use that would allow for office and clinics, maybe on the bottom floors, some retail, and then the top floors would be residential. So I'm really excited. I think a lot of properties changing hands, and developers or people who have development experience are getting control of the properties and coming in with their ideas.
You know, it occurs to me, I haven't heard much lately about Century 2. Is it anything going on in there? We're just waiting for something to happen, or what do we? Have we got a plan or anything?
You know, the council's focus right now is on on balancing the operating budget and making sure that we are addressing our maintenance needs from a capital standpoint. And so we're not, you know, we've already put, the council's committed to putting money into C2 to make sure that it's maintained. But I don't know that there is consideration, at least at this point, for taking the next steps on the master plan. I really I liked and appreciated the work that was done on the most recent plan, because I think it's the one that's the most practical and but will also produce a great amenity for the community. And that keeps the round building, changes some of the uses in that building. It expands the Bob Brown Convention Center. It repurposes the library. And it does it in a way that I think also creates some great public space outside of those facilities. And then constructs a bridge that connects the east and west sides of the Arkansas. So I want to get there. It's going to take us some time. I think we have some basic work we have to get done on infrastructure and operations before we get to the C2 enhancements.
Public Works have probably got a chance to show their stuff as we start the new year. How do you assess their performance during the snowstorms?
You know, they had a terrible hand dealt them. They were doing a great job of getting sand and salt down, getting ready for the storm. And then I think it was like 4:30 in the morning, we get that significant ice storm that hits. Yeah. And then the snow goes on top of that. And it was, so they were fighting against the elements for, you know, more than 48 hours to make our streets passable. I think they've done a fantastic job. All of our arterials are clear. Obviously, our residentials, you know, still are somewhat snow and ice covered, but, you know, we're going to have some good weather here coming up, and I think that will take care of it. But those folks have worked so hard. They worked 12-hour shifts over a long period of time, and I was just, you know, I received a lot of positive comments from the public, and so that's a great way to judge their effectiveness, just not the way, you know, I eyeball it, but what do our residents think?
The nation's attention has been focused on this, on the fires in the Los Angeles area. And I've been noting a lot of criticism going in for city officials and fire officials and government. And what's your assessment of that? Because I'm asking for for an opinion, but wasn't that just too big a thing for anybody to plan for? What do you think?
Well, I've heard some firefighters that are on the scene that said they've never seen anything like it. And I think when you have hurricane-force winds whipping through an area like they did, it's almost impossible to contain a fire. And you know, far from me to ever point fingers to anyone, I think they're better equipped to deal with those types of fires than we would be here, just because they experience all the time. They have a statewide group called Cal Fire that knows how to deal with wildfires.
Yeah.
We do, on many occasions, send some of our crews to help with wildfires. So we have some folks that are well-trained. They're used to dealing more with the grass fires that we have in our region, and can lend their expertise to similar efforts around the country, and have done that before. And I think I've even been in the middle of wildfires. But it's, I don't know how you could effectively have protected all those homes.
Right. You know, I don't want to put any more words in your mouth. But I want to ask, what's the best part of your job outside of the fact that you get to talk to the media? What's the best part of your job, Bob?
It's kind of twofold. I said the first thing is being able to work with people that are so dedicated to public service. I noticed that when I first got here, and it just is reinforced every time I watch the work of our employees. You know, Steve, I think it's pretty safe to say I've got about 3,100 full-time employees that work for the city of Wichita, and I think a majority of those people wake up every day thinking about what are they going to do to make life better for the citizens of the Wichita. Now, that may sound corny, but just in the work that they do improve the quality of life here. And they are friendly and dedicated employees, and they're great professionals. So I get joy just being associated with them daily. And I some of the best parts of my day are when I'm, you know, in the lobby of our building or in, you know, in the elevator or whatever, and I have a chance to talk to our employees. They're just wonderful people.
Listen,
but I think that's the second part of that is that's reflective of the kind of folks that are in Wichita. And I've told you this before. You know, this is home for me. I love this community, and I the people have been, you know, so nice, not just to me and my family, but that's just their nature. They're nice to each other, and they're nice to visitors. So it's a great place to live. And so those are joyous things for me.
Sorry, I have to cut you off there. We're out of time. Thanks for being with us. Our guest, Wichita City Manager Robert Layton. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2025.
Gearing up for the big game? We are too. Join us on the Moth Podcast for a special episode dedicated to hilarious true stories about football, family, and growing up.
I loved Franco Harris so much that in 1975, I invited him to my bar mitzvah. And he was so cool that he actually sent me a telegram.
Each week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, and above all, true. Find the Moth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.